This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to You're Making It Worse. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
We're here. We're queer.
Meh.
Textual healing.
Okay, so I kind of wanted to, we've been getting this question a lot recently, and I wanted to kind of address things and put everyone's concerns to rest. Recent episode, Elliot mentioned that he has a boyfriend, and this is true. And ever since, however, we've been basically inundated with messages and comments, people who were frankly panicked and wondering, is Elliot still unhinged?
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to answer this just once, and I'm going to answer it without an ounce of equivocation. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Elliot Glazer is and will always be wildly unhinged.
Wildly.
Now, to clarify, Elliot is in a great monogamous relationship with his boyfriend, and of course, we support that. So he is no longer unhinged with people. He's merely unhinged with inanimate objects.
Yeah. But oh my God. Hands don't count as people. So like, even if they're people, they're separate from the person.
So let me give an example. You probably have heard of, you know, the president of the United States has what's called the football. This is someone who follows him around everywhere he goes with a suitcase filled with nuclear codes in case a launch is ever required. Well, Elliot actually does the same thing, except his football is a suitcase filled with kielbasas. And for instance, we were actually at a food court, the three of us recently, and Elliot was like, oh my God, I'm so horny. And we're like, Jesus, dude, TMI. And at that point, he motions Carl over. He motions Carl over, and Elliot removed a foot long from the suitcase and he slapped it against his face, gagged on it for a while. You know, just standard Elliot Glazer stuff.
Gagged on it. You had Carl? To add in the gagged on it
Did
for a while.
Carl? Who's Carl?
He's the guy. He's the football. He's the guy that holds your football, Elliot. You pay him like 80 grand a year.
That's my dad's name too, Carl.
Is Carl your dad's name? I don't think I knew that.
Yeah.
Wow.
But people had been very concerned, and so I just wanted them to be reassured that nothing has changed, really, when it comes to Elliot Glazer and his and his urges, so to speak.
His lustful urges.
So glad you spent all this. I was like, how long is this bit going to go?
Brent was literally on the plane writing this on a napkin. On a napkin.
You guys pretend like these things aren't true. And it's so wild to me.
It is true. I would like, we should have Jake just send in an audio.
Oh, God, no. Leave him out of this.
I'm going to text him, actually.
No, leave him out of this.
Text him.
Yeah.
This is why you should never give your boyfriend's phone number to your friends.
That's right.
This is why. This reason.
Elliot literally won't do it to me. Every time, I always kind of jokingly am like, hey, what's your new boyfriend's phone number? And Elliot's like, you're never getting his phone number. Okay, so here's the textual healing of today, of this week.
After all of that, here's what we're going to talk about.
That's right. As it turns out, Superman's son is coming out as bisexual.
He likes the dick.
The LGBTQIAU community has finally arrived, and Superman's son is bisexual. Of course, the son's name is Jonathan.
It's not John.
It's not John.
Never
nope,
John.
Not Johnny even.
Not Johnny.
It's I'm Jonathan. I like picture his son as like, I'm Jeffrey Jonathan. He like comes out as bisexual and now he's like Jeffrey Jonathan. So, you know, this was one of these things where it kind of like made, you know, made some news. It's not entirely uncharted territory. A few months back, DC Comics announced Tim Drake, who is the third character to assume the Robin role, would have a boyfriend. Robin from Batman.
Batman. Okay.
Yeah. And which I quite frankly makes perfect sense. I used to be obsessed with Robin. What'd you say?
I think the Green Lantern too was like gay at some point in one iteration. Cause I remember, I don't know anything about comics at all, but I share a name with the Green Lantern, Alan Scott. And so every time there's like a tagging of something, people would tag me in the news about the Green Lantern because they would just conveniently forget about the H. It was very, very strange.
No, I can understand the connection.
Yeah, we spell it the same way in everything. So right. I'm secretly the Green Lantern, you guys.
I've just never been into comics, and it's such a thing now. It just everywhere you go. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
But like people aren't undercover about it anymore. So I feel like I'm the jackass for not knowing about this. Dare I say this dumb shit? I don't know. It just never really struck my fancy comic books. Anything like, about them. Are you into them, Elliot?
I liked, I loved Archie comics as a kid. Archie.
Do you like Riverdale? Is that the one that's like based on Archie?
I don't care about Riverdale. I just like the comic books, but like, I got it. I mean, I kind of was into a little bit of comic books, but nothing crazy superhero-y per se.
Yeah.
But I can't keep up with because I'm so like sort of compulsive or not compulsive but like neurotic. I can't really because I can't keep track of the chronology of these movies and the MCU versus the MU, like all these universes and where these movies fall. Like I don't know where Guardians of the Galaxy falls. So I can't watch, like, it's too much.
Yeah.
And I can't keep up, but I'm not turned off by it at all. I can't keep up. And if I don't have the chronology correct, I'm like, well, why start now?
That's part of my problem is that I find I have to like if I want to get into comics and understand something, especially if it becomes a film or something that is, you know, I want to watch, I feel like I need to go in order of like how it was released and stuff. And it's really difficult for some of these like big ones like Superman or Batman or any of those because like they have such long histories that you don't know where to go. So when I was a kid, I never was really into comics, but as I got older, I was more into like graphic novels and shit.
I will say
now I am because you know Michael and I are very much Disney gays. And but the cool ones, not the ridiculous ones. And they have the new Marvel universe at Disneyland right now. And so I've been watching the Marvel films to sort of understand the universe and stuff. And it's actually a lot of fun.
Are they?
They are so much fun.
I don't know. I think I watched Guardians of the Galaxy was the one with Groot, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I think I watched one of those. Is that a comic book, by the way?
It is. I think it is a comic book. Oh. Yeah, I haven't gotten to those because I've been watching, again, going back to sort of what Elliot was talking about, wanting to go in chronological order. I've been watching the Marvel Universe in chronological order, and I haven't gotten Guardians yet.
But
Guardians, well, the movie started like in the mid-aughts or late-aughts with Iron Man. And it kind of...
Which was great.
So I've been following sort of like in the timeline, because they all have a timeline. The MCU universe or whatever has a timeline. And I've been following it on Disney Plus, not sponsored, should be. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of fascinating to see how they're all connected. And then when they all get together for the Avengers fights or whatever, it's like... I get sucked into it. My favorite though is Spider-Man. I do like a Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man's great.
Spider-Man's a lot of fun. And the new Spider-Man, like there's other iterations of Spider-Man, of course, but the new Spider-Man, lots of fun.
It is. It is.
I'll say this. I was really into the Dick Tracy movie from 1991.
Same.
With Warren Buffett. Oof. I hated Madonna. Warren Beatty. I was like, get Madonna out of this. She's so boring.
Wait. The idea of Warren Buffett whispering into Madonna's ear.
Make sure you invest in Google.
Oh, God. But I do think that comic books are good for bad guys, because I do love a I love a crazy bad guy.
How
I love
far
a
did
crazy
you go
face. I
with
love
Dick
flat
Tracy.
Top.
How far did you go with Dick Tracy in terms of
I just
of,
watched
like,
the
your...
movie and still do, by the way, like
I was
every
obsessed
other year.
With Dick Tracy to the point where I had to get every single toy that the Dick Tracy film had.
Yes.
And I even got the no face toy, which was apparently very hard to get. And I had a whole box, a collector's box of all of my Dick Tracy toys that I could like
I
put them.
I'll one up you. I would comb my hair so that I looked like Flat Top and go to school.
Are there
and tell
pictures
people that I was
flat are there top. Pictures?
No, because it didn't actually look like I had a flat top. So anyway, I guess ultimately this is good news. I guess I don't know.
Well, I mean, the thing
sometimes
is,
I'm like, I wish Axios would quit covering this bullshit. It's like it makes sense. Yes, of course, characters should be bi and gay and whatever, and mm-hmm. and whatever. It should be representative of the population. But it's almost like it's no longer news, guys. You know?
I mean, yeah. I think it's no longer. I don't think it's news, but it really hit a lot and was like covered in a lot of places and I think it trended
something.
And but the thing is that two things. One, his son is bi, but apparently like until now he has assumed the mantle of Superman. So I guess he technically is Superman. Not that it really matters, but what's really funny to me is that Dean Cain, who played Superman for a couple of seasons on that show in the 90s or whatever, he's a conservative. He went on, he went on like Fox or something and was saying mm-hmm. that this is bandwagoning and that it's like, you know, he basically wanted to make it about him, which is hilarious because it's like, well, you know, you are not actually Superman.
Right.
You played Superman.
The funniest thing that came out of that was this, someone did a tweet being like, Dean Cain is so pathetic that even when he plays Superman in a show, he can't leave the show as famous as the Lois Lane, Terry Hatcher, who became obviously more famous. It's like, that's how much of a loser you are.
I remember that show was on when we were in like,
middle school,
you guys were,
grade
you guys
school,
were in college,
even.
But when I was in like fifth grade, and which is like the absolute prime target for a show.
Did you
like
watch
that.
It?
Yes, and it was so fucking boring.
Yeah, I don't remember.
It was
anything
so
about
boring.
It.
It like nothing happened in that show.
Yeah, I do remember liking Terry Hatcher's hair.
Okay.
The weirdest part about the whole Dean Cain thing is that I very distinctly remember renting a movie called The Broken Hearts Club from 2000.
Yes.
Where it's like him on like a gay baseball league.
Yeah, it was like a big thing.
It was like a big gay movie that he was in on like a gay baseball league.
In a year when there was like three gay movies. Yes, that was one of the big gay movies. Right. Out of three, it's not so hard. What's funny about Dean Cain is during the election, he and the woman who was the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer in the movie, I forget her name now, they did a play.
Swanson.
Yes, they did a play because they're big Trump supporters, like huge.
Yeah,
Trump supporters.
She is.
And so is he.
Wait,
and
who is?
Dean Cain and the Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And they did a play reading about the Mueller report or whatever. And it was like, there's video of it online and it is so funny to watch because it is so badly acted. And they're like, this is, we need to fundraise to make this a movie to show people the truth.
Oh my God.
I gotta see that movie.
I'll send you the link. It's so good. I'll try to find a clip.
Oh my God. Oh, it's called Obama Gate Play. No, it's not. I can't tell what it's called, but okay. I'm so excited. I can't wait to watch.
Not even joking.
We are here today with a psychotherapist and a friend of mine.
The way you said it, you've made it sound like it was some sort of like disability. A psycho. We're here with the psycho.
An emphasis on the psycho. Yeah. I thought about you. Don't you worry.
Torres. Hi, Omar.
Hi.
Brent, you were saying something? I apologize.
I'm sorry, Omar. I just wanted to kind of, you know, set some ground rules because obviously we're speaking with therapists and like I want to make sure everything's like appropriate. So we're obviously going to be talking a lot about really personal things in Elliot's life that he might have told you.
Yeah.
And I just feel very strongly that our audience members don't share that information with other people.
There might be some emotional triggers along the way.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'll take my notes out. Don't worry.
right.
My character profile on Elliot. Yeah.
So Omar, you're a friend and a queer therapist who works with a lot of queer clients, not exclusively, but you're in New York and you've been practicing for a while. And, you know, I thought it would be cool to like actually talk to a, well, we've had a gay therapist on before. I don't know how much we should. I mean, he he was on the show and we talked.
He used to be my supervisor.
Oh, that is surreal. Wait,
we should probably say who we're talking about. We had Matt Dempsey on before. Yeah, he's a queer therapist. And it was a good little chat that we had.
Yeah, it was a good chat. But yeah, so now you have your own practice in New York.
Yes.
How long has that been
going on? A long time coming. Oh gosh. I think I'm on the third year. I think it's about
Is it called something fun or is it just your name?
It's just my name. I officially it's the Torres Group.
That's fun.
That's fun.
My mom had like a senior nursing business in like the 80s, 90s, and it was called Helping Friends. So I always thought if you have like your own health thing, it should be something fun. Like, come sit with me. That's what you could call it.
That's actually really good, Alan. It's really good.
Yeah. Come sit with me. I love that. How impressed with yourself you just were right now. Like, what a good idea.
I mean, that happens a lot, and I don't have much work, so they're not usually impressed in the pitch room, but whatever.
So, let me ask you, maybe the most basic question I could ask is like, what's the difference between consulting with straight folks and gay? Like, are there differences or is it kind of the same problems? And I assume obviously you have experience with both.
That's such a good question. You know, I haven't spent a ton of time actually thinking about the differences, but off the top of my head, I mean, it's not so much that the issues or the topics that come up are different. It's a lot of the same, like, you know, who am I? Like, what is it about me that I don't like about myself? And, you know, and how do those things sort of manifest themselves interpersonally? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, a lot of queer folks obviously deal with. The difference, however, is of course, navigating the world as a queer person, right? Like the challenges that one faces because of that, the trauma, the, you know, the triggers, all the T's, right? So that sort of adds a more complex layer to a lot of what's discussed, right? So issues around like body image, for example, or eating, that you know does come up with straight clients, but like the motivations are a little bit different and like the pressure feels a lot more like high stakesy for a lot of queer people. I would say those are like the main differences.
That's actually really interesting and obviously strikes some familiar tones in my life you know, just recently, obviously, this has been in the news. People have been talking about how, there was all this research at Facebook that showed that Instagram was really bad for teenage girls and body images. And I'm like, yes, B, also fucking me. Like, it's absolutely destroyed how I view myself.
From the beginning of, like, Instagram is that, like, this sort of, and I think, again, queer people leading the way, like we did with like online dating, and we were always online for a long time. And then now with Grindr and seeing the images coming from Grindr and then Instagram, it's like, we've known about this impact that like bad body image, like unobtainable body image that Instagram and internet can do. Like how, I mean, I think a lot of people think, oh, it's only one type of person that has like a bad body image. Like you probably get a parade of people who are coming to you about body image issues.
I mean, from the folks who you wouldn't think would have body image issues all the way to folks that, you know, folks in larger bodies that really deal with a lot of discrimination and a lot of stigma everything in between. Yeah, it just feels so high stakes. And actually, when that comes up, one of the questions I ask is, who are you following on Instagram? And I will talk and I'll be like, it is time to clean up shop. I don't want you following folks that you don't know for no reason, just because they're hot.
Interesting.
And we'll have a chat about that. You know, I'm not like a drill sergeant about it, right? I'm not like,
of course, check.
But, you know, I strongly encourage that. And I'm like, you know, someone, you know, you want to follow someone that's hot, obviously that's fine. But really try to like also follow ideas that you know resonate with you, or like art that resonates with you. And so if the artist happens to be really hot, like fine, you know, I'll give you that. But otherwise I talk about limiting that, and it does make a difference even in my own life. Like it's made a huge maybe not huge. It's significant, definitely a significant difference, just like in the way I like look at myself and the world around me.
You know, one of the bummers for me is that I follow few enough people that when I do find someone that I'm like enthralled with, I don't forget them. So I can unfollow them. But like, and this is actually just happened to me last night where I was like, oh, I wonder how this one guy's been doing. And I go on.
But you've never met him. You don't know him.
We had actually this person in particular, we had chatted, but I didn't know him. Yeah. Like, you know, in depth.
Yeah.
And I went on his page and he just had the three hottest pictures I've ever seen of someone. And like, we're never going to meet. And of course, instantly I'm like, I look at myself and I see like, just like a, you know, a bag of barf and, and it, but it's such a curse because you're like, I can't forget these, you can't lose them.
Yeah.
You know, they're always, you know, as long as his profile is not on private, I'm always going to be able, you know, every couple of weeks to be like, I wonder how that guy's really hot guy's doing. And then I look and he's doing great. And, you know, or he seems like he's doing great. And
right. It's
such a curse, you know?
Can I share with you like what I do personally? When
yes.
I'm
like, oh.
In that situation. So
no, a few no.
Things. Yeah, imagine you're like, no, I'm good.
No, thanks.
So a few things. One, folks in hospice are one of the most like researched groups in like psychology, right? We love interviewing people when they're about to die because we want to know like, so as you look back on your life, like, what do you think? And not one person, not one, and I can rarely say this when it comes to any kind of research in terms of psychology, not one person ever has ever said, you know, I really wish I went to the gym more. You know, I really wish I put down that pizza. I really wish I had one more ab. No one in the history of redoing that research, working with this cohort has
just ever wait for the Gen Zers to die.
Yeah.
Wait for them to die.
Right.
Just you.
Right.
What do you think that says?
That it's meaningless, ultimately. Yeah. Right. And then it just reminds me like, oh yeah, it doesn't actually matter. Or, you know, I also ask myself remind myself like, no one's asking you, Omar, to have like the perfect, like no one needs that from you.
Yeah.
Your clients don't need that from you. Your friends don't need that from you.
Yeah.
Your family does. Like no one's asking you to look like that. So who gives a shit, right? Like,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, don't.
Unless you're doing it for yourself, what's the point? Like there's no, there's literally no other point unless it's literally to make yourself happy.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
I nod as I drink my morning protein shake that I drink before I go to gym. But yeah.
Do you have anyone, Omar, just sort of closing out Instagram for a minute? Because I feel like there's a lot of Instagram phobias when it comes to queer people in general. I'm obsessed with people. And I joked about this last night because my mom brought it up. She was like, oh my God, you're almost to a certain number on Instagram. And I was like, I've never thought about it, but thank you for thinking about people liking me. Does anyone ever complain, especially people maybe with large Instagram followings, do they ever complain about not hitting certain numbers in therapy? Because I'm obsessed with the idea of someone complaining about social media in therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, not as often. Not as often as you might think, but often enough where I'm like, okay, this is a thing that, you know, I have to address or become somewhat familiar with, just like around, like, being liked and popularity and, you know, comparing yourself like so-and-so has more followers than I do. And it like pisses me off. And, you know, and again, I bring it back to like, I promise you on your dying breath is not going to be about how many followers you had or didn't have.
Right.
Like, I absolutely promise you that. And then of course, talking about what that number means to them. Right. And it's like, because of Instagram, we're able to quantify value in a way we haven't been able to quantify it before. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I get it. I understand why it's relevant. It also comes up a lot in not necessarily followers, but couples therapy.
No way.
Yeah.
Like competing against each other?
That doesn't surprise me.
Like
looking at other people, right?
Yes. Yes. So it comes up in every couple's work that I do now, like every couple I've worked with, pretty much it has come up, you know, I saw you liking so-and-so's picture and blah, blah, blah.
I have straight friends that have had that problem.
Oh yeah. Me too.
Of course. Yeah.
Certainly universal. Yeah.
Which is probably why Instagram got rid of that activity feed thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. They used to have a feed where you could yeah, it's gone. Yeah. They used to have a feed where you could see like who's following who or who liked what or whatever. And now you can't see that, which is, I think, probably healthy.
Oh my God. Yeah, infinitely so. I have a friend who we have like fairly similar tastes. And of course, I'm not going to give his name because occasionally I would
name him.
I would go on. I'm like, oh, I wonder what David's up to. And it would be like, oh, David, just follow this person. It would be like some like ripped 17-year-old. And you're like, I don't think David wants anyone.
Twitter
to know.
Still does that though. Literally just yesterday, I saw on my Twitter feed, Twitter told me that someone I follow liked something, and it was like some ridiculously thirsty photo of someone. So of course, I screenshotted it and texted it to him, being like,
horrifying.
"It's 2 p.m. You need to be outside doing something. What are you doing?
What are you doing with your life?"
Yes. You can still see on Instagram what hashtags people follow.
Oh, of course.
Which is personal.
That. Which mine are pathetic because it's like Golden Girls, drag.
Mine is Gordon Setters, quite frankly. Cutest dog That's breed in the world.
How have your relationships to social media changed? Like as the podcast has gotten more popular and as you've got more followers, like is it, I don't know, have you like made peace with it? Is there struggle, some tension behind it? Like how would you describe your relationships to it?
You know, mine has always been very standoffish. Alan and Elliot, I think, are a little bit more into it. But, you know, I just, you know, we've beaten this theme several times recently. But like, I just see it as truly like the evil of all evils in over the last 5 years. And I think for the next 10 years to come. So all I can think about is doing everything I can to like manage my life successfully without utilizing these just miserable hate machines, which is what social media is.
I see it as performative. And if like literally in my head, I see it as sort of like I know it's all an artifice. And so that somehow mentally helps me understand, like, for example, I guess the biggest thing that happens is sometimes I'll see someone doing something, you know, a peer of mine, like a entertainment peer getting something big or like succeeding in some way. And then of course, for like 5 minutes, I'll let myself like stew in it. You know what I mean? Yeah, like I can do that. That could have been me, you know? And that's the real impact for me, at least, of social media is it creates this sort of jealousy or envy in a way that sometimes can be like mentally really troubling. And then of course I take myself out of that. And I try to like, this is so cheesy, but I literally go to like my 18-year-old self and I'm like, what would my 18-year-old self think of me now? And I would be like, he'd probably be like, wow, you done shit. Like you've done more shit than you thought you were going to do at 18. Yeah. And so that kind of helps me separate myself from that envy and that jealousy that sometimes comes. That's the biggest impact for social media for me. Yeah. But otherwise I love it. It's a big stage.
Yeah. What about you, Elliot?
No, that is funny because I think that's, it's so real. The idea of like everybody, I mean, I'm sure it's you know, it's a broad broad stroke across like all industries and even personal lives about like seeing other people succeed and feeling jealous. But it's so funny to me because the MO, I think, is everybody feels that stewing. They can stew in that anger or jealousy or whatever it is. But then the MO now is to be like, you go, girl, you know, and like, and it's so, even if it's genuine, you know, being like congratulatory, because you can be congratulatory. It's so funny because nobody in their right mind would be like, I could have had that, you know?
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah. But for me, it's just a tug of war because the performative element of it is so beguiling to me. And I think like, you know, more than ever, going through the feed and seeing people do the most benign, completely inoffensive, inane stuff of truly like taking a picture somewhere or just filming at a brunch or something. To me, I still kind of can't, the tug of war is in believing that like, one would want to do that. One would want to document and share that because I guess as my followership has gone up, I've become less and less interested in like sharing things that aren't in some way pretty impersonal.
Yeah.
It's just sort of an existential, all of it is an existential crisis. And I do think that like, obviously it has a lot of merits, but it's definitely at least in my opinion, outweighed by just such toxic cycles that I think only hurt people. And even people who are civilians and not performers, the way they talk about followers is terrifying.
I was just at a thing where someone had, they had a party here where it was like an influencer party, but no one was influencers. It was purely based on the number of followers you had.
God. I'm getting too bummed out. Yeah. You know, let me ask you, Omar, like, so this might seem like a strange question, but like, is there ever like in dealing with gay clients, is there ever like weird tension? Is there, do you ever sort of get strange feelings that maybe they have a crush on you or anything like that, like where it kind of like throws you into like a whole like, well, I have to be extraordinarily professional. Do you ever have crushes on clients?
Isn't there a word for that kind of stuff? Like
transference and counter transference.
That's Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I told you to say that. Yeah.
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 Folks love that question. I'm just like, I'm going to do such a cliche therapist thing and answer a question with a question. But what's the intrigue for you in understanding?
Oh,
I'm curious.
Yes. Well, I can tell you, I have always had extreme discomfort with gay therapists because I've always, it's been my deep-seated fear. And of course, I'm not transferring this onto you. But it's always been my deep-seated fear that at some point they will gain my trust and then they will like betray me by making some like weird sexual comment or something. And that's always, and it's always just been like a fear that has pushed me away from gay therapists.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. That there will be like a betrayal at some point. And then do you find that comes up for you in dating as well? Like the fear of betrayal?
I think I'm fairly trusting, at a certain point in dating situations. I mean, I literally, before I've seen someone three times, I think everyone wants to murder me, and that I just assume that at any point in time, they're like plotting how they're going to kill me that moment. But outside of that, I think I'm fairly trusting at a certain point. Yeah.
Cool. So to answer your question, I mean, I don't know if this says more about me, like not paying attention or anything. I have rarely, if ever, felt like, oh, a client has a crush on me. Maybe I can count on one hand, and I've been doing this for almost 10 years. How many times I've sensed, oh, they're flirting with me, or oh, I think they have a crush on me, or like a client will come in and I usually like to do a little like relationship history. So like, tell me about like your exes, who you've dated, blah, blah, blah. And if they start rattling off a list of like Latin names, like, well, there was Juan and then Carlos and
right.
And I'm like, so what do you think about the fact that your therapist is Latin and everyone you dated is Latin? Like, what do you make of that? Right. And I'll ask them that. And we'll chat about it. And often
you'll unpack it even.
Exactly. Right. If you will.
It feels like a commonality. I thought it was a real commonality that like patients at some point feel.
I've never gotten that. I don't get that.
But look at the Sopranos. I mean, I know it's a stupid analogy, but like,
I don't think he was ever attracted to her though. It was the mother complex.
There was such a sexual tension there, and I thought it was such a Oh my God. Yes.
All right.
I thought that was about the commonality of transference, of like patients falling for their therapist or even less than that. Like even if it is a maternal instinct, like I thought it's very common to put your feelings onto or into your therapist.
Yeah. I mean, I did have a client once during the first session or the second one. They said, okay, I think we need to sort of like get this, put this on the table, get this out there. I really want to fuck you. And we need to talk about, they were really smart about it. Cause they said, and I'm afraid that my attraction to you is going to impact the work in a negative way. I'm not going to share things with you because I want to sleep with you. And so we had a really good discussion about that and how to like clock that and yada yada. And then like 3 months later, I shit you not, he comes in and he goes, I have good news. And I'm thinking like, oh, he like reached a goal of his, or he broke a pattern. He goes,
right,
I don't want to fuck you anymore. Wow. I was like, hey. Kind of offended. No, I'm kidding. I was like,
isn't that kind of it though? That like, it isn't so much that they necessarily have a crush on you or fall for, like, it's, to me, and that's why, like, with the whole Sopranos thing, even, like, it's not so much that they want to be with the therapist. It's more like it's that sort of almost animal instinct of like, oh, I wonder what that's like to have sex with that person. I wonder what it's like, right, to hook up with that person. It's more sort of like,
I think it's less about me, Omar.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's a sexual reaction rather than like, oh, well, this person's intimate in my life. I wonder what it would be like to hook up with them, rather than like, I want to be in a relationship with them, you know?
Right. I also don't find therapy to be very sexy. So I've also been asked to like, oh, have you ever had a crush on a client? And it's like, no, because we don't talk about sexy things. Like, we're talking about, you know, their like abusive childhood.
And right.
That That's hot.
So, you know, but there is like a care, like I will often in my own head refer to my clients as like, oh, these cutie patooties, right? Like there is like a genuine kind of care and almost like, like mother hen love for them in a lot of ways. They're like my babies, kind of.
Well, I appreciate also, the Rosie O'Donnell reference thing.
It's also like over time, and we know this, and I've said this before, over time, like, you remember you would like start a class in college and you're like, oh God, this class is so ugly. And then like by the end of the semester, you're like, everyone's cute because you've learned all their quirks. And like, this guy always asks really dumb questions and this guy's always late. And I love that about, you know, like just little things like that. I can totally see sort of, you know, the affinity kind of building over time, for clients and so forth.
Do you, can you, how would you tell somebody to go about acquiring therapy or like treating mental health on a budget, you know, if they can't afford, you know, one-on-one therapy and a, you know what I mean? Like, what is, how would you help somebody find therapy in a way that's, you know, budget friendly?
So if they have insurance, I would encourage them to call, you know, in the back of every insurance card, there's a customer service number you call and you can ask them, right? Like, here's a zip code. I want to find, you know, like therapists that specialize in a particular issue in this zip code. Can you help me find someone in network, right? So that's like one way of doing it. Another thing that I often tell people is a lot of therapists, not all, but a lot of us do offer sliding scales. So just ask. It's rare that I don't think many therapists volunteer that information unless they're asked. So I'll ask whoever you're, you know, potentially going to work with if they offer a sliding scale, you know, because I do. And I do like an honor. I do like, what do they call that? Honor system, honor code. I just ask them, what can you afford? Like, if they're like, listen, I can't afford your full fee, I'll go, what can you afford? And whatever they tell me, I go, okay, you're good.
That's so important, just because, I mean, I feel like, you know, the three of us, we probably have insurance. Like, we have the resources and ability to sort of access some of this information, but there are so many queer people, especially now, who are out of work because of COVID or because of things in their what's happening in their states, or they're a marginalized person of color, trans person, who doesn't necessarily have the resources that some of us do to be able to get over that fear of asking a therapist, how can I work this out so that it benefits, like, how can we work out a deal here? Because there is a fear of that rejection, of being rejected by medical professionals a lot of times, because they probably had a history of it.
I was actually going to tell you one of my favorite stories about therapies. I saw this therapist for a short period of time and I actually did really like him, but our first session, I was like, you know, I would struggle paying the full fee. And he's like, well, I work on a sliding scale, what can you afford? And I was like, you know, I feel uncomfortable saying a number. And he's like, well, I want you to tell me what you, you know, and we both hemmed and hawed. We both hemmed and hawed for a while. And then I gave a number. He goes, I don't go that low. And I was humiliated. It was like, it was truly, and I was like, well, why'd you make me say that then? Yeah. Like, why'd you do that? Let me ask you one more question, because this is something, you told that story about the guy who's like, I really want to fuck you. And instantly I'm like, I hate that guy. I can't imagine like sitting in an office with someone who would say that to my face. Even though it was good for him for being honest, what's it like if you have a client that you don't like? Like, does it become difficult over time? Have you ever let someone go? Cause you're like, I can't deal with how
shitty you are. Who have you fired?
Yeah. So rarely, there have been very few instances where I've let a client go or I fired a client. And it's usually, I'm trying to think. So it's usually because there's like an issue that I'm like, I really cannot help. And I will refer them to someone. I'm like, I think this, you know, I think this therapist would be able to better help you with like whatever the thing is. And if a client is like always late or calling out or just like not showing up, I like to address it first and ask them like, what's going on here? Is there something I can do? Is maybe the time slot sucks, right? Or if I feel like the relationship is enabling something in the client that is hurting them, which that happens less often, but every now and again, I'm like, actually, I think you working with me is like, again, almost motivating a particular pattern that I don't think is like good for you. So we should probably
break up. I wanted to ask you about, now when I first saw, because we had the list of, you know, things about you so we could get to know you. And when I first saw Brave Trails, I thought it was like something within the line of like pretty privileged, like it was some problem that gay people might have, you know what I mean? And I was like, what, is this something new that I have to be concerned with now? I can't take it. But it's not. It's a great organization. What can you tell us more about what that is and your work with it?
But yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad you brought that up. When you were describing like what you thought it might be, it reminded me of that 30 Rock episode where Jenna Maroney, she founded a camp for pretty blonde
girls.
Brave Trails, it's this wonderful organization. It's a camp, accredited camp that basically works with queer youth. It's gay camp. It's queer That's youth great. Leadership camp. It's inclusive, right? So allies are welcome to join as well. Sometimes, you know, a queer camper will come with their like, you know, heterosexual sibling, right? Like for support and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's not exclusively for queer youth, but, you know, a lot of the programming, because again, it's a leadership camp on top of like regular camp where they do like hiking and archery and swimming. They also have like sex ed workshops. They also have a mandatory anti-racism classes that campers of color can opt out of, but everyone else has to attend. And that's, you know, organized by a really, really wonderful staff, most of whom are volunteering their own time to do this.
Great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's basically like what I wish I would have had as a kid.
Yeah.
It's a lot of that like inner child work stuff that was coming up for me when I first volunteered there. And my role there was basically like the on-site therapist for the campers, right? So we didn't have like traditional one-on-one therapy, but it was more like providing emotional support and helping navigate like particularly difficult conversations.
That's so great.
Yeah. And I think the reason you bring that up is you're saying you want us to be celebrity guests at the
campers. Oh, yeah. Should we go?
Well, you can certainly speak to our agent.
I can do sex ed. Speak to
our agent about our fee.
We do need that. Yes.
Can you imagine me showing up doing sex education and drag?
The answer is no, I cannot.
Oh my God. I would love that.
Omar, this has been so enlightening. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me again. I'm the least talented guest you've ever had.
Shut up. You have more college education than most of our guests.
But where can people find you? Or I guess maybe if you want to give out the phone number for your office in case folks need therapy in New York City, whatever you want to share.
So you can follow me on Instagram. It's Omar the Therapist. If you're just to like warn everybody, I post a lot about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And
You love Sarah Michelle Gellar.
This is good to know.
I am an SMG. It's basically an SMG stan account at this point. It's
I'm here for that.
Nonstop. Okay. If you want to look me up as far as like my practice, you can just Google Omar Torres Therapy. And I'll
pop and what up. About Brave Trails? Where can they find more on Brave Trails?
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yes. So their Instagram account is Camp Brave Trails. And again, you could Google, find their website, Brave Trails, and you can donate, you can volunteer your time. And they're really, really flexible with how you can volunteer. So you can show up to give a workshop, or you can spend, you know, it's a sleepaway camp, right? So you can spend the entire time there, which is what I do. Just like helping and all that good stuff, and spending time just like trying to do good work and to give back to queer youth.
Which that's so great.
That's great.
Great. That's amazing. Well, so thanks again, Omar.
Thank you again.
Thanks
again.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And another thing.
So now that we are this close to Halloween, this episode will be airing right before, as people like to say, the spooky season, which is apparently overused more than ever this year. People are complaining about the term.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be a fun time to share my deepest, truest fear, which I really didn't discover until this, in the last like 5 years, till I moved to LA, when I could actually see the moon, which you can't really see in New York. And I realized that I have an actual, like, it's not, this sounds like, it's going to sound like a whimsical sort of performative put on that I just use to sound quirky, but it is a genuine fear that strikes deep in my belly when I see the moon. I'm not afraid of the moon, but I'm afraid of the moon if it is big in the sky. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid of the moon, but if it is big and low in the sky, if it's a strawberry moon, if the moon is like if I can take my fingers and make it look like the size of a quarter, you know, in the sky, that's fine. But if it's bigger than that, I am so repulsed by the big moon.
You get very freaked out.
I get
about
like
it.
Sick. It's really gross.
There's nothing that I enjoy more than like texting Elliot.
I know.
Or
so funny.
No, like I really do think people listening right now, tonight, go out, take a picture of the moon and tag Elliot.
I don't care if it's a picture of the moon.
Good idea.
But you don't understand. I don't care about a picture of the moon.
It's going to be your thing. Your unhinged moon fear.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that when I see the moon, there's a movie called Melancholia that
it's a great film.
And it's a movie about the moon hitting the earth.
Yes.
A slow
it
strike.
Is it
the moon
singular
or a
nightmare?
It's a meteor, Melancholia. But it's like a no, meteor.
Oh yeah, you're right.
But it's like a slow moving asteroid where people are preparing for death.
And it looks like the moon setting in the distance. Yeah.
Someone told me about it and I almost threw up. Like,
it is such a beautiful film though.
I'm sure it is, but I would never in a million years.
I mean, it's interesting because like, you guys know, I follow a lot of like astronomical stuff and they've recently been talking about how like a sort of way, you know, way outside of the norm. But the moon has started deviating closer to the Earth.
Ooh.
And they're saying that within a couple years it might actually start coming close enough that it'll hit the Earth, Elliot.
I definitely thought you were serious for a second.
Yeah. I've literally made that joke a bunch of times. Today.
What is it about the
moon? I figured it out. I think I have figured it out.
Yeah.
I think ultimately, because I mean this is terrible, but because I witnessed 9/11 in real life.
Oh
like,
my God. You're not comparing the moon to 9/11.
No, I'm not. Listen, you have to let me.
Who are you, Rudy Giuliani?
let me at least explain it. Again, this is all I think. I've diagnosed it myself.
Yeah.
I think that.
That sentence alone tells me
everything. Being from New York and living through 9/11 was obviously a traumatic thing for everybody who was there, everybody who experienced it, whatever. So I've had like PTSD dreams from it from that for years. But I realized that when I see watching watching the skyline in New York change in real time, seeing something so unnatural in a stagnant skyline change and in such a horrifying way made things that look unusual in the sky creepy to me. And so when the moon is like big and creepy or a different color, I get creeped out. Or there was like a scene in The Leftovers. Basically, there's a scene in that show where the end of the world is happening. And these two characters hold hands and look at the sky as these missiles begin to strike. But they're like tiny. So they look like fireworks.
Yeah.
And they start coming closer and closer. And it's like nauseating.
Yeah.
I do think it's connected to like living through 9/11.
I think you're correct, but in a different way. I think it's actually a fear of one of the largest things that you can sit on, but you can't sit on
it's
it.
It's true.
It's just too far away. And no matter how big or small it gets in the sky, you're never going to have it, Elliot.
And Elliot struggles with spheres. He prefers, obviously, oblong.
Exactly. Oh exactly.
Brent's always texting me about, like, what do you call, I forget what you call them, pussy pocket?
Pussy plugs.
Pussy plugs. And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I know what a butt plug is, but I don't even know, like,
technically would
Elliot
be a pussy
literally
plug.
Has an $80,000 collection of butt plugs.
I don't know.
Yes. Yeah.
Wooden ones from the 1700s. He has like a $2,000 wooden butt plug from the 1700s.
Yeah,
I don't even.
King Arthur himself used it.
That's right.
I have to. I honestly don't know. I'm not a prude. I'm not saying I'm a prude. I'm not saying I'm naive. But I don't. Do people just sit on them? Like, is it like a? Is it?
Well, it's meant to stretch you out so that you can.
Yeah. No, I don't think people sit on them like at work. No.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure some people do because they have they're for pleasure, but it's also to stretch you out. But I mean, there are some that are made for, like, work where you can, like, have like a vibrator on it or something.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, yeah. There's a whole
There's a whole line of how people satisfy themselves, and we're not here to judge that. We're just here to make fun of Elliot.
No judgment at all.
Yeah, we're only here to make fun of Elliot for it.
I mean, that's the thing. It takes him like 20 minutes to choose his butt plug for the day every morning.
It's like.
But wait, we were going to talk about Halloween.
Yes.
So I love Halloween. It's so much fun.
Yeah, we talked about your love of Halloween, which surprised me because I didn't know that.
Yeah, I guess you guys were surprised by that. Do you ever find that Halloween is like a little bit too thotty at this point, especially amongst like the gay scene? Like, it's like guys, I remember
it's
in
not
college,
just the gays. It's not guy, just the gays.
No, certainly not. Certainly not. But guys in college would just, I remember one guy was a devil, a shirtless devil.
Yeah.
So he was like in all blue shirtless one year. And then, all red because he's a devil. Yeah. And then the next year he was a like an angel and he was all blue, shirtless angel, all blue. And you're just like, take your shirt off. Like, who cares? You don't have to dress up and put body paint on.
This is the one night a year you can walk into a bar with your shirt off and it's part of your costume. It's
right. Yeah. But does that bother you guys? Do you ever do that? Do you ever do like shirtless, like Halloween costumes?
I would never do a shirtless Halloween costume. It doesn't bother me though. No, I find it very basic. Like
it's
I find people who lack imagination go in that direction oftentimes because they can't go in a more creative direction or a more well thought out concept or story. But I'm sure there are examples of thotty costumes that are well thought out and are very interesting. And I have no problem with people being thotty. I just also, like, if they have the right to be thotty in West Hollywood or in the West Village or whatever with their costumes, I have the right to openly tell my friends, look at that basic dude over there. Like, he couldn't even think of a costume. He's walking around with his shirt off. How dumb is that?
Right,
you know what I mean? Like,
right.
And that's what makes America wonderful.
Yeah,
right. I don't care. I just feel like we're light years I'm so truly unmoved by like thirstiness and thoughtiness now because I feel like it's just metastasized to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
But I do think it's like funny when people, I still think it's funny when people pretend that they're not doing that.
Yeah.
But for me, I think the gay couple's costume that always creeps me out is, I mean, it's so basic, but it's also gross to me because it's like when they do like sexy Mario and Luigi from
Brothers,
and I'm like, you guys know you're playing brothers, right? Like what? You're not playing boyfriend. It's ridiculous.
This year, considering that, like, you know, this is a year where there's lots of opportunities for different costumes, like the Squid Game, etc. Is there like one costume that you like dread seeing, particularly this year? For me, it's going to be the Kim K Met Gala look where she came in the full, like she had the mask, the black mask over her face and it was all black thing. I want to see how many people fuck that up.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't love the idea of, I mean, even the kid who I mentor, who's 10, was like, oh, I think I might do Squid Game. And I'm like, you shouldn't know what that is.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be watching that show and you shouldn't be so. I'm creeped out by the idea of that being so.
It is wild, isn't it?
It's such a. The show
What's
is.
What's it about?
It's essentially about the debt crisis in Korea. But it's about people who are in deep debt who get wrapped into a game to then get a very deadly live or die game to then get themselves out of debt for the rest of their life and become fabulously wealthy. It's very violent. There's a whole scene
really
where
dark.
There's a red green game where I'm not really spoiling anything for anybody who's listening, but where if you're found moving on the red light, they shoot you. Like it's a whole, and that's how they eliminate players and stuff. So it's a very
they
violent,
shoot you with like a paintball
dystopian
gun.
Game. Yeah.
No paintball gun.
This is real.
So it's like a.
It's just death everywhere.
Do you guys have costumes in mind this year, though?
No, I never. Dress I haven't. Up. I don't want to dress up to get drunk. Like I don't want to spend money to dress up to get drunk.
But why do you like Halloween if you like you don't?
Yeah,
what
I
do
love
you like
watching other people. I love. First of all, I love ghost stories. I love fall. It's one of my favorite times of year. I like how everyone. I like watching like. Adults get really caught up in it. My dad loves the holiday. Mm. You know, everyone's eating candy.
Your dad
which
loves
is
Halloween.
My dad loves Halloween.
Whoa,
so great!
That.
And I think I've talked about this on the podcast before.
Yeah,
my dad,
that's right.
My dad famously cared about trick or treaters coming to the house so much that he would keep statistics from year to year. And like manipulate variables to see if like any one thing would help bring more trick or treaters to the door.
My God.
They go to Boston now to spend it with my brother.
How Elliot's surprised that your dad loves trick or treaters. I think you'll also be surprised that my mother absolutely hates trick or treaters.
Wow.
To the point where the lights will be completely off in the house and everyone will be in the basement so that my mother does not have to deal with any
That's
of these.
So funny.
Does she leave out candy?
She does not even leave out candy.
Wow.
She says she raised her kids. She's not given anything for free.
Oh my God. That's so surprising.
She does not like trick-or-treating. She finds it to be just like dumb and like a stupid idea.
But you trick-or-treated when you were kids, right?
No, I really didn't. I had to go with other families because my mom hated it so much. And my mom also blamed, there's a show about it on right now, the American Horror Story, this season, Mamie Eisenhower. She blamed Mamie Eisenhower for popularizing Halloween, which she did. And so my mom just like, no, not for us. No.
Wow.
No. Oh my God.
Yeah, so I never really did. I'd always have to be with friends.
What's your costume this year, Elliot?
Oh, I don't. All I care about is dressing up my dog, and we're still figuring out.
Should
I reveal what I'm going to be, or should I save it for the gram? I don't know.
It's up to you.
I don't
Three,
know. Should I, Michael?
Two,
should I?
One. End of episode.
Is it Miss Piggy?
No, it's not Miss Piggy. Wait, what'd you say? It's not Miss Piggy. It comes out, I won't say it, but I'll give a hint.
Okay.
It involves a classy, campy movie and a child being beaten.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I know it's...
Anyone listening, if you figured out what it is by the time this episode comes out on Thursday, then post in the comments because you'll see the picture on Friday.
And everyone who posts, everyone is allowed to make a guess what Alan's costume is, and Elliot will give all those folks who make any guess $50. He'll Venmo you $50.
Or send a dick pic. I mean, it's either
that's
or.
Possible too.
Yeah, you might get both. Who knows?
Might get both.
Is it okay if it's my dog stick?
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your aunt Ramona have to say about listening to today's show?
You should dress up for Halloween as Superman's son, Jeffrey Jonathan.
My aunt Joanne would say, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar is Jewish, apparently, but she's been known to have a Christmas tree in her house, so.
Oh, no.
I got your grandma is, and I say this intentionally, the Christmas Nazi. Right.
How about Aunt Anne?
My Aunt Anne would be like, I'm not surprised that Superman's gay. He's flying around in tights with underwear over his tights.
It's true.
This man has always been queer.
That's what that sketch on the Anonymously Gay Duo was so Batman and Robin.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And Aunt Anne does not use the term queer progressively. Anyway.
That was an insult.
Everyone have a happy, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween,
spooky
everyone.
Season.
I'm Bill. Elliot Glazer.
He's Bill. Elliot Glazer. I'm Brent Sullivan.
I am H. Elliot Stick Scott.
my God.
We talked a lot about Elliot's dick in the between segments. That's why, guys. And you're never going to hear it. You're never going to hear it.
Whenever it's a heavy episode, I'm like, all right, we need to take 2 weeks off. 2 weeks off on Hinge jokes.
To reflect on Elliot's dick.
Yeah.